name is Carolyn Conklin, and I'm from Cleveland State University. It's February 23rd, 2011. And Beth, do you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, my name is Beth Knorr, and I'm the Farmers Market Manager for Cuyahoga Valley Countryside Conservancy.
Great. So my first question is just, how did you become involved with Countryside Conservancy?
Well, my first involvement began, I believe, in 2006. I was a farmer at Crown Point Ecology Center in Bath, which is just up the hill from the valley. My husband and I co-managed a farm for the nonprofit, and we decided to take some of our produce to the Countryside Farmers Market at Heritage Farms at the time. So I did that for 2 summers, and so that was my first introduction to the Countryside Conservancy. Actually, it wasn't my first introduction. It was my first meaningful connection with Countryside Conservancy. We had known about the program that was revitalizing farms within the national park when it started. And when that first request for proposals came out, Darwin Kelsey, the director at Countryside Conservancy, came up and took some photos of my husband at Crown Point to use as an example of the kind of small-scale farms he was envisioning to be part of this project. So that was our first real introduction to it, but participating in the farmers market was the first way that we got involved. And, that was 2 years. So I did that 2005 and 2006. And then in 2007, I actually got a job with Countryside Conservancy. I started as the FarmLink coordinator, which is a unique program in Ohio where we connect retiring farmers who have land with beginning farmers who need access to land. I did that part-time, and I also began to manage the farmers markets part-time. And partway through that first year, I shifted to managing the farmers markets full-time and have been doing so ever since. Well, the farm still exists, and my husband's still there. It's a nonprofit organization called Crown Point Ecology Center, and the whole property is about 130 acres, but we farm anywhere between 10 and 12 acres. It's the longest-running community-supported agriculture farm in Northeast Ohio, and this year we have about 180 CSA members. I say we, but it's not really we anymore. It's him. we don't live on the farm. It's a nonprofit, and so it's his job. But we grow just about every vegetable that we can possibly grow in Ohio, and our CSA runs from, he's starting now in April, and it goes every week until the end of October, and then he has some winter shares in the week right before Thanksgiving and then the week right before Christmas. So, the community-supported agriculture is where families pay a flat fee up front, and in exchange for that investment in the farm, they get their dividends are produce, so every week they get a portion of what's available on the farm. And so there's more and more CSAs cropping up throughout Northeast Ohio, which is a really good thing. There's far more demand right now than there actually are shares available. So.
And do you still sell produce at the farmers market?
No, actually, they only sold for 1 year at the farmers market after I left. I'm the outgoing half. I'm the outgoing person in our partnership, and so selling at a farmer's market was really difficult for him because he's terribly shy. So after I left, they did it for a year, and then they stopped. And they kind of felt, too, that they had an extremely long waiting list for their CSA, and it just didn't really make sense for them to wonder how much they were going to sell at a farmer's market when they knew that they could sell X amount through their CSA. So they stopped doing that, which I was sad that they weren't coming anymore. But, it made sense, too.
What did you like about the farmer's market?
excelling at it? Oh, I loved it. I loved interacting directly with the customers on a weekly basis, you know, talking to them about what they did with the products, how they liked it, what they didn't like, you know. And it was all, you know, swapping recipes is always fun at the farmer's market. But, you know, seeing people come back week after week and getting that direct feedback and having people get excited about the products that you're offering is really gratifying.
What was your favorite recipe?
There's too many to name, but my favorite vegetable is, well, I actually have a couple, but eggplant. I really loved our eggplant. That was my favorite thing to grow, although I really love carrots too, but eggplant and carrots.
what made you want to join the Countryside Conservancy?
As a staff person? Mm-hmm. Well, I loved the farmer's market, and it was more of a matter of what was happening in our lives personally at the time that we decided to have one of us get a job that wasn't on the farm. We were having our second child, and we thought it would be better if one of us had a job that wasn't so many hours, which is funny because any nonprofit has far more hours than what is actually stated in the job description. But it just worked out timing that the farmer's market manager, when I was participating as a vendor, was leaving. And the organization had also received funding to launch the FarmLink program. So it worked out just, it was just pure dumb luck, really, that I was able to do that. So
tell us about your role.
As the farmer's market manager, right now we manage two farmers markets, one on Saturdays at Howe Meadow, which is the Cuyahoga Valley National Park special event site. And then for the past 4 years, we've had a farmers market at Stan Hewitt Hall and Gardens on Thursday evenings. So it's my job to manage every aspect of those markets, from recruiting vendors and to managing the product mix, making sure that we don't have an overwhelming amount of any given item so that it ensures that each vendor has the opportunity to succeed and make money at their venture, to arranging cooking demonstrations and, you know, entertainment at the market and you know, publicizing it, marketing the market, making sure that we get good customer attendance, and making sure that that grows steadily, and really seeking out new and unique products to add to the market. So that's basically what I do. I also do work on policy issues. I've worked with the Ohio Food Policy Council, one of their task forces, the Market Connections Task Force. I also sit on the board of the Farmers Market Management Network, which is a statewide group in Ohio that advocates for farmers markets. And I also sit on the USDA's Fruit and Vegetable Industry Advisory Committee. And so I work on policy issues that affect small-scale farmers who are marketing their product directly to the consumers. So making sure that those policies make sense and are really kind of leveling the playing field for small and mid-scale farmers versus large-scale farmers.
What are some of the policies that are most important to you?
Well, right now, one of the things that I see a lot of action happening around. 2 years ago, we at Countryside Conservancy decided to be able to try to accept food assistance at the farmers market. So we went through the process of being able to accept that. It's called SNAP. I think it's Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. It's formerly known as food stamps. And at the time, there weren't very many markets in Ohio doing that. But now, nationwide, that's something that's really being advocated for by the USDA itself. And that's something I'm really excited to see, because I do believe that everybody has the right to high-quality food, and it shouldn't be a matter of income. I mean, food is such it's a necessity for life. And, you know, it's really important to me personally that everybody in our community can access the food that we have at the market. Whether or not they choose to do it or not is another thing, but making sure that it's an option for them is important to me.
I actually have a question at this point. How are they going to work that out? Because I know food stamps, they use a card. And
We have one of those. No, we have a central machine, and we swipe the cards, and they are given tokens that they can then use at each individual vendor stand. And, you know, it's the rules are the same as they are if you're shopping at the grocery store. There are certain things that you can purchase with your tokens, and there are certain things that you can't. It has to be a food item. It can also be plants. I mean, if you want to grow a garden at your home, those things are also, you can purchase those, but you can't purchase a hot cup of coffee or pet food or something like that. But that's how it works, which is really a neat thing. And I've helped several other farmers markets in Northeast Ohio work on that process so they're able to do it. And I'm really excited to see how many people, how many markets are starting to do it now, which is a great thing. It's important.
Can you take us through a day at the farmers market? Like to be there.
A day at the farmer's market is an early morning. So a day in our Saturday farmer's market is pretty early. We get to the office around 6 o'clock or so, and we head out to the market site. We're usually there by 6:15 or 6:30, depending on the time of the season and how many vendors we have coming. And we set up our own tents. You know, we have a couple of booths for information for customers, where we accept the tokens or use the cards to for customers to purchase tokens. We set up our cooking demonstration stand, a musician stand, and then once the vendors start coming, usually around 6:45 or 7, it's a matter of making sure that they're setting up. We often have a lot of volunteers who help them with that. And just making sure everybody's arriving on time and getting where they need to go. At 9 o'clock, we actually have a cowbell that we ring to open the market, and we actually make our customers wait until 9 o'clock, which gives the vendors enough time to finish setting up and getting ready. And if they're there early enough, the vendors are, you can see the vendors walking around the market doing their shopping really quick before all the customers get there. But at 9 o'clock, we ring the cowbell and in go the customers. And that's actually really a fun thing to see, just the rush of customers. And they all disperse and go to their favorite stands. And then it's just a lot of hustle and bustle until about noon. Our market ends at noon, and it packs up and everybody takes off and we head back to the office, and that's the day. We're usually done. You know, we have some vendor fees that we have to deal with at the end of the day and that kind of stuff and some paperwork. So we're usually done by 2:30 or 3 on a Saturday. And relatively the same routine for a Thursday evening market too. So
what kinds of entertainment do you schedule?
Mostly music. You know, and we don't have a very large budget, so the musicians just set out a tip jar. If they have CDs or something like that, they sell those too. We've also had cookbook authors come and sign cookbooks, or other authors. You know, the Akron Manuscript Club comes and shares stuff that they're doing. We've had people like Laura Taxel come down and sign copies of her Cleveland Ethnic Eats for us. And Mary Lou Suzko, who is from Vermilion, has written a cookbook about local food in Ohio, and she came and did a book signing a couple of summers ago for us. And so those are the kinds of things that we do. And, you know, the past couple of years we've had tomato tastings in the summer where people can taste upwards of 30 different varieties of tomatoes at a single go. And we also, for Halloween, have been having, you know, encouraging the kids to dress up, and if they dress up they get a caramel apple or something like that. So that's a lot of fun.
Broad reception to events at the farmers market, like the tomato tasting? Or what are some of people's favorite times of the year?
I think that is probably folks' favorite is the tomato tasting. And we have worked with Chef Jonathan Sawyer, who's up at the Greenhouse Tavern in downtown Cleveland. And he and a number of his chefs come down and they have a competition between themselves, a salsa competition. You know, they give themselves 30 minutes time to shop and make the salsa, and then the customers decide whose is their favorite. But I think it's really nice for people. You know, we print out a list of all the tomato varieties that are being offered at the farmers market that summer. Last year, I think we had about 130 varieties being grown between all the vendors. But on that given day, you know, whatever's ripe is what we'll taste. And it's usually around 30 varieties, so people can just take a little slice off, you know, learn the name of that item, and it tells them what farms are selling that. So if they like it, they know exactly where to go to get it. Or if they want to grow it in their own garden the following year, they know what varieties they like. So, you know, some favorite varieties have been Kellogg's Breakfast and I think Andrew Reinhardt was another name of one. Sun Gold cherry tomatoes are always a favorite for people. They're these little orange cherry tomatoes that are just really addictive. And Brandywines are always in the top in the top 10 of favorite tomatoes for people.
Do you have a favorite tomato?
Mortgage Lifter is my favorite, and the Japanese trefeli, which is like a pear-shaped dark, it's almost like a brownish color. A couple summers ago I made some tomato jam with that, and that's fabulous.
Can you just describe how do they taste different from each other or from other tomatoes?
Well, the Mortgage Lifter is, you know, a big beefy tomato. It's the kind of tomato that you want to get if you want to have a tomato sandwich, and it just has a really full tomato flavor. The Japanese trefeli tomato is a little bit sweeter. It's been a while since I've had one, though, so it's kind of hard to describe after relying on my memory there, but When I made the tomato jam with it, it cooked down to a real nice thick consistency, and it was really good on lamb.
All right. Thinking back on your years in the valley, what is your strongest memory related to farming?
No, I guess my strongest memory related to farming was when I was actually farming, and it wasn't quite in the valley, but kind of on the rim there. You know, just standing out in the field on a nice, warm, sunny day, picking a bunch of sweet peppers, and that's a pretty strong memory for me right there.
Did you grow up on a farm?
Nope. I grew up in the suburbs, and my dad had a small garden, mostly strawberries, and so I recall, you know, plundering his garden for strawberries, but I didn't really want any part of growing anything at the time. But as I got older, that was something that, you know, I had a strong pull to do. So.
And what pulled you to farming?
My desire to make a meaningful contribution to the world and do something that was environmentally sensitive. You know, the farm that my husband and I worked on is certified organic, and, you know, we make the choice to eat 3 times a day. And the more chemicals we can eliminate from that is the better, I think. So, I mean, that was a strong drive for me, is to just do something that meant something and that was going to have a positive impact on the world, or our little portion of it anyway.
And how do you think that farming really has a positive impact on the world?
In so many ways. I mean, food is elemental. We need it to survive. And, you know, when people think of celebrating, they think of food. When people mourn, they think of food. You know, food is so important to our lives. And really, the relationships that you build, or that we built personally at the farm where we work, were really strong. You know, some of our CSA members that had been with us for a number of years, they're the ones that threw my bridal shower for me. You know, I watched their kids grow up. Some little kids that were, you know, 5 and 6 and sitting on blankets in the farm are now graduating from college. And, you know, so it's this kind of farming, and the farming that's happening in the valley right now, is that kind of farming. It's really fostering community. And I think that that existed a long time ago, you know, probably back in the history of the Cuyahoga Valley too. And I think it's wonderful to see that coming back in that way, and that these relationships are being reestablished, and that people who aren't farming for a living are really understanding the importance of agriculture in their lives and making the effort to learn what it takes to get food on their plates. And, you know, the foundation of any good society is built on an agriculture surplus. And so understanding what farmers do, I think, is really an important part of life, at least for me, anyway.
And I think you kind of already talked about this, but is there anything else that you want to say about how your job supports local farmers?
Well, we at Countryside Conservancy, my job, you know, just directly creates opportunities for them to sell to the public. And having strong, thriving farmers markets is really an important outlet for many farmers in our region. And there are more and more farmers markets being established all the time, and I think it's a wonderful thing. You know, so we're directly supporting their livelihood there.
Is there a particular project that you're working on right now?
At the farmers market? Well, actually, yeah, we received a little bit of grant funding to start a project that we're calling Waste Not, which is an effort we're undertaking to reduce our waste at the farmers market. Being in a national park, I mean, it just kind of struck me that, you know, we talk about the sustainability of supporting local farms and that kind of thing, and here we are doing farmers markets to support them, but we are generating quite a bit of waste on each and every market day. So what can we do to eliminate that? So we've decided to do this Waste Not project where we'll start separating out waste at the farmers market and diverting that through, you know, recycling, through composting, and, you know, inevitably there's going to be some trash, but we're really hoping to reduce that by a significant amount. There's only one other farmers market in the nation that I know of that's doing that, and that's the Ferry Plaza Farmers Market out in San Francisco. So we're hoping that we can, you know, be an example out here. And because of our relationship with the Cuyahoga Valley National Park, I mean, it just makes sense to do everything we do in the most sustainable way that we can.
Has that been successful so far?
Well, we're just launching it this May, so we're still in the planning stages. So hopefully it goes well.
Are there any other projects on the table for the future?
None that I can really speak of.
Let's see. You talked about this again already, but anything else about how Countryside Conservancy has made local farming more sustainable?
I think Countryside Conservancy has made it I don't know about more sustainable, but more accessible by more people. Because the national park is such a visible place, I mean, we really do have a bully pulpit to talk about the importance of sustainable agriculture. We're right in the middle of two very large populations, and so the access to farms by those populations in their national park is really a fantastic opportunity that many people wouldn't have otherwise. And I think it just demonstrates that, you know, I think many people have this image of farming as being very destructive and to the environment in particular. And I think having examples of agriculture within a national park that are not is a really important thing to highlight.
Can you tell us about the history of Countryside Conservancy?
Well, it was established back in 1999, and its original focus was on the farms within the national park. I think they looked at something like 80 different properties at the time and kind of whittled that down to about 30 or so properties that they thought that they could put together to be cohesive farms. And they decided that they were going to put out a request for proposals to see, you know, what people were interested in doing with those properties and what kind of plans people could come up with for those. And over the years, that's grown. I think originally they were hoping to have 20 to 25. I think now we're looking at maybe 13 to 15 in total. I think a lot of that just comes down to, you know, budgets. But it's really been interesting to see the range of proposals we've had and to see the program grow from, you know, just one or two farms to now we have 11 operational farms. And we've really moved from, like, a startup phase, and now we're entering our maintenance phase. And how, now that we have 11 farms operating in the park, how can we work together as a group to really highlight our activities and what it is that we're doing, and these really, you know, unique farms. I mean, there's 15 chances in the whole nation to farm in a national park, you know. So what can we do to promote that activity, and what can they, as farmers, how can they collaborate to really become more viable businesses too? So
can you tell us about some of the farms?
Sure. We have a range of farms. A lot of them raise vegetables. We have several community-supported agriculture programs. We have a pick-your-own operation that does berries, a whole range, like strawberries, blueberries, raspberries. They also have a CSA. We have one farm that raises chicken and hogs and turkeys, as well as vegetables. And all of these farms are engaged in marketing directly to the public. Oh, we also have a winery right across the street from Blossom, which I don't know that there's a better location for a winery. So, you know, it really runs the gamut. But we also have a lamb farm that does a lot of sheep shearing demonstrations and, you know, border collie demonstrations for sheep herding and that kind of thing. But, you know, they also raise the lamb for meat. We have a goat farm that raises a heritage breed of goats that's I think it's a Tennessee Mitonic goat, or Tennessee Fainting Goat it's called. But, you know, if you startle them, they fall over and faint, so to speak. But there's, you know, some large ethnic communities within Northeast Ohio that really enjoy goats, so they have no problem selling their goat to those communities. And even some really nice restaurants up in the Cleveland area have it on their menus. And so, yeah, there's just a range of farming activity down here.
And those are open to the public?
Well, I mean, there's still, you know, people live there, and so they're open to the public in the sense that they're on public land. But, you know, we always encourage people to call ahead before they visit, before you just start traipsing through their property. So,
can you tell us about the process of how those farmers got their proposals accepted and how they came to work with you?
Well, that process isn't something that I'm directly involved with, but I know that there's, you know, there is a proposal process, and people from Countryside Conservancy are involved with that. People from the National Park Service are also involved in that, and each proposal is rated based on, you know, the strength of their business proposal. Do they really look like they can pull it off? Have they come up with a really well-planned idea? Does it look like they're going to be able to execute it? Do they know what markets they're going to be accessing? How are they going to market it? All those things are taken a look at, and then they make recommendations. That committee makes recommendations to the park superintendent, and ultimately he has the final say.
As far as marketing, what sorts of things do the farmers or does Countryside Conservancy help them with to promote their products and their farms?
Well, Countryside Conservancy has their information on our website, and you know, every chance we get, we try to talk to them, talk about them, and promote what they're doing. Many of the farmers, like I said, directly market to consumers. Whether it's they have consumers coming to their farms and buying directly from them, we have a few of the farmers that participate in the farmers market. Not all of them do. It's illegal to sell wine at farmers markets at Ohio, so we don't have our winery participating. Maybe someday that will change, but for now that's the status. The goat farmers, they can't raise enough goats to, I mean, they're sold out all the time, so you know they don't need to come to the farmers market necessarily. But we do have several of the farms who come to the farmers markets. Other farms have community supported agriculture programs and market it that way. So it's really, you know, up to the individual farm, you know, to determine how they want to sell it, and we'll support them in their efforts however we can.
Can you tell us about how successful you think Countryside Conservancy is and why?
That's an interesting question. We're successful in the respect that we have farms in the Cuyahoga Valley National Park now. But like I said, I think we're just now shifting from the startup phase and getting farms established phase to really helping them develop a sense of community amongst themselves. I think it is a successful program. And the reason I say that is we do have people from across the country and even from Canada contacting us, asking us about our program and how they can emulate that on properties they have. You know, Stark County down in, you know, the Canton area, they have a farm that they just put out a request for proposals after talking with Darwin a couple of years ago about that whole process, and they modified it for their needs, and they're replicating that. We've had discussions with people in Aurora who their park system has a couple of farms that they want to do similar things with it. People from Toronto have contacted us and asked how does that work, how can we adapt that, how can we use that here. And in fact, a couple of years ago, the National Park Service had a conference here in the Cuyahoga Valley specifically to take a look at the farms within the park and how the different farms within the National Park Service could maybe adapt this model to meet their needs. So, you know, we have created a model for people to use, and, you know, people are participating in it. People are interested in putting in proposals, and, you know, I think that's encouraging.
Can you take us through a day in your job? What do you do every day?
Oh, my gosh. I think that's too boring to talk about. Really, it varies from day to day. Today, I'm working on writing a blog post about engaging your kids with agriculture. I'm also contacting my vendors about putting in their applications for this summer's farmers markets. I'm also talking to those same vendors about letting me know whether or not they're going to be participating in our next winter market, which is March 12th. And I'm working with one of my staff members to put our vendor profiles on our website. What else am I doing today? Working with the Summit Food Policy Coalition to talk about putting together a good food charter for Summit County, Ohio. So it just... Every day is something different. That's kind of what I like about this job. and that I'm interacting with farmers on a daily basis. That means a lot to me. Now that I'm not farming myself anymore, it was important to me to make sure that I was still doing something ag-related. So,
can you tell us more about those interactions with farmers on a daily basis?
Well, it depends on who I'm chatting with, but, you know... a lot of it throughout the season is just, are you coming this Saturday? What are you going to be bringing? Do you have anything that you want us to put in our email newsletter to let customers know what to expect at the market this Saturday? I talk with them frequently about what products we need at the farmer's market. There's still, you know, if you look at your pantry and at your refrigerator, there's still a lot of opportunities for things that can be grown right around here that aren't being grown here, at least not in, in a large quantity. Talking to them about the things that we need at the farmer's market, they're also bringing ideas to me, you know, can I bring this, can I bring that, that kind of thing, and really helping to guide them as to what the market needs and what they would do well with. Other times it's just calling to catch up, somebody I haven't talked to in a while, how are things going, what's happening on your farm, that kind of thing. Or opportunities, like if we've seen a grant that would apply to them, you know, forwarding that information on to them, that there's, here's an opportunity. Just today, actually, there was something, I think OSU Extension was doing a beekeeping study on CSAs in the area, so we contacted our CSA farms in the valley and let them know about that. There was something else that was being studied, too, that we forwarded along today. So, you know, just trying to keep in contact with them.
What have been the biggest changes at Countryside Conservancy over time?
I think scope of our programs. You know, originally it was just those farms in the valley. But then in 2004, we started managing farmers markets, which was not something I think that was planned on originally. But in 2004, we started managing farmers markets. And then in 2006... Countryside Conservancy merged with the Farmland Center of Northeast Ohio, and that is an organization that had been working on farmland preservation issues. And the unique thing about the Farmland Center at the time was they were really talking about farmland preservation in new ways. People had always been talking about conservation easements and the importance of putting those on properties to keep them as farms so that they wouldn't be developed. But Amelie Lipstrew, who was the director of that organization at the time, was talking about the importance of farm viability, the ability for farmers to make a living farming, and that was key to making sure that farms weren't being developed. That if you have a successful business, you're not going to want to give that up, you know, and your kids will see the opportunities long term and want to stay there. So she was kind of talking about it in those terms, which was relatively new for the whole farmland preservation scene, and that resonated with Darwin Kelsey, our director, and they had more and more discussions, and they did a lot of collaborations together, and then they just decided that it made sense to merge. And the Farmland Center covered a 16-county area in Northeast Ohio, so immediately we expanded from the Cuyahoga Valley to all of Northeast Ohio. And then the addition of the FarmLink program came on. And so we've really, our programmatic focus has expanded quite a bit since then. We also do like business training now for farmers, and we host educational workshops. We do webinars and that kind of thing to help farmers develop their skills and that kind of thing. So really from focusing on the farms in the park to helping farmers, you know, establish sound businesses and all over Northeast Ohio, that's really been a big change for us.
What kinds of things do you help teach and work with the farmers at those seminars?
Business planning is a big piece. We have a course called Your Farm Business, and it really takes people through, you know, planning, coming up with a business plan, how to secure funds for your, how to secure capital for your business, equipment, hiring staff, you know, just all the same things that any other small business would need, but really with an agriculture focus. Last Friday, we gave a workshop on how to manage a community-supported agriculture program, how you can start one of those on your farm, and what things do you need to consider in order to do that. You know, it's a much more education-intensive undertaking than just selling your products at the farmer's market. You're involved with the same group of people every week, and you really have to focus educational efforts and make sure that they know what's happening on your farm and that kind of thing. We also teach the Exploring the Small Farm Dream class, which people who have a notion that they might like to farm at some point take to find out if they really do want to do that as a business or if they just want to have a garden. And that really just kind of helps them determine if that's what they want to do or not. And we also do workshops on connecting with area chefs, you know, how to sell your products to local restaurants and that kind of thing.
Is there any other educational outreach that you're involved with?
Yeah, we do a lot of speaking engagements for local civic groups and that kind of thing at libraries and other organizations that want to learn more about local food and farming in Northeast Ohio. We do that on a regular basis.
Have you found that interest in farms and growing your own produce, has that increased?
Yes, drastically.
Why do you think that is?
Well, sadly, I think part of it comes from, you know, concerns about food safety. You know, the past several years have seen large-scale outbreaks with eggs and peanut butter and spinach and peppers and that kind of thing. And I think people are just really, you know, pretty concerned about that. So I think people are really interested in getting into it. And I think, too, right now, with the demand for local food, a lot of people see it as a business opportunity. You know, our economy isn't that fabulous right now, so why not start your own job? You know, make your own job, grow food and sell it, and everybody needs to eat. So, you know, in that sense, there is job security there, you know.
And how has your role changed since you started here?
I've definitely shifted more into policy. You know, before, when I first started, you know, it was the Farm Link and the farmers market, and that was pretty much all I was doing, and now a much larger portion of my time focuses on, you know, working on policy.
Any specific policies?
Well, just with the different groups and trying to come to some consensus with the groups that I'm on as to what kind of recommendations we can make. Like, should there be in Ohio a purchasing policy where Ohio foods take, you know, get an advantage? And what does that mean for our neighboring states that we have good relationships with and so on? And what policies should we put in place for food at schools? You know, should we encourage them to do local purchasing and start farm-to-school programs or what kind of policy should be in place for people who are growing produce versus those that are growing commodity crops? And it runs the gamut.
What goals do you have for Countryside Conservancy over time?
Well, our mission statement is to support community-based agriculture. And we would like to see Northeast Ohio become, you know, a place where there's, you know, a multitude of thriving farms, and that local food is easily accessed no matter where you are. It's common in restaurants and that kind of thing. So that's really something that we'd like to see, and that we're hoping we can play a role in.
Do you have any goals or hopes for farming practices in general beyond the Cuyahoga Valley?
Yeah, I hope we get more farmers. We need more farmers growing produce specifically. I mean, it's no secret any longer that we need more produce to live healthier, longer lives. And right now we don't have enough farmers growing enough produce for all of Americans to even eat the daily recommendation. So we definitely need more farmers. So hopefully that's something that will change over time.
And do you have any other memorable stories about farm life in the valley?
Having not grown up in the valley, I don't really have any you know, memories of that. So, no.
I have a question.
Sure.
You said that you didn't grow up farming, mm-hmm. but you wanted to do farming partly for your children. So could you tell us about the difference in what you perceive as growing up on a farm as opposed to however and wherever you grew up?
Yeah. And I have to laugh because my dad said that he and my mom considered buying a farm for a long time. And I tell him, I said, why didn't you do that? I could have a farm now if you did that. But I think that there are so many things that you learn on a farm. For example, with the CSA, we had people come out and volunteer for a few hours at a time. And many families would bring their kids. And there are so many useful things that you can learn on a farm. Basic math skills, you know, on any given day. For example, if we had 40 shares that we were harvesting for that day, we would have the kids count out what we had harvested and divide it by 40. Just a basic application of mathematical skills. I mean, that's pretty, you know, basic. But just things like that. And watching how things grow and just gaining an appreciation for the amount of time and effort and energy that it takes to produce your food. And being able to go out and just pick something off the plant and stick it in your mouth. I mean, I think that those kinds of things are just, I think you learn a sense of independence on a farm that maybe you don't not on a farm, I guess. I don't know. At least that's how I perceive it, you know.
What do you think your kids would say?
I don't know. Right now, my daughter, who will be 7 next month, says that she wants to be a farmer's market manager when she grows up. But, I mean, that's the kind of thing I expect her to say at that age. We'll see what she says when she's 15. I don't know. But I do know, I see lots of families who come out to the farm are really excited to see that their kids can see the plants that are growing their food and can pick some of it and can talk to the farmer. And actually, one of my favorite memories when I was still farming is, you know, 10 acres is really micro scale comparatively. You know, there's much, much larger farms, but we had quite a bit of equipment because 10 acres is a lot for a couple of people. But driving the tractor, I remember one day seeing a little girl who was coming with her family to pick up their share of the product. And the look on her face when she saw me on the tractor was priceless. You know, she was just flabbergasted that there was a girl on the tractor as opposed to, you know, my husband on the tractor. So that was a pretty cool thing. And just the look on her face, I'm like, wow. That kind of thing is pretty cool. Yeah, I don't know what my son wants to be a rescue hero and a farmer, so I don't know how he can merge those two.
Any other questions? Is there anything else you would like to share just about, you know, your job or the valley, farming in general?
No, I mean, I just think that the Countryside Initiative Program in particular is a really neat model, and I think it really does demonstrate the fact that not all agriculture is destructive and that there are methods of farming that are perfectly compatible with a national park setting, and that I'm hoping that that plays a role in shifting our larger culture's attitude towards agriculture. So that's it.